You're listening to Sean Henry's Becoming, a podcast that focuses on the emotional journey of an entrepreneur from the thought of their business to the execution and beyond. I am your host, Sean Henry, a serial entrepreneur, speaker, real estate investor, landlord, 21-year retired Army veteran, and author of When the Bank Says No. I'm sitting down with entrepreneurs to talk about their processes and the lessons they've learned along the way. Fasten your seatbelts. The journey is rough, but rewarding.
On the road to success and the race for the cure, we duel to the death, we strive to endure. We keep ourselves from all the same fuel. Suddenly road only knows one way. I knew that I would make it one day, but that's not what this one's about. I'm disappointed.
Have you ever met a musician or a rapper who felt they were terrible at their craft but kept going anyway? Not only did they keep going, they formed a band and put out an album. Well, Sean McGee, guitarist and rapper of the band Black History, has felt this way about his music since the beginning, but has been blessed with the guidance of talented people to guide him along the way, starting with his older siblings. Let's hear it from Sean.
Well, I helped me out with music, and I'll, you might have these questions later on. I don't want to steal your thunder, but it helped me out a lot with music because, going to the skating rink, with them and at the time, the Soul Sonic Force was out, right? And they had a song called Planet Rock, and all that was really introduced to me as an extension of them, you know. And when we talk about the movement, I got introduced to the movement from my older siblings because they were fighting the power, and because my brother was going downtown when I was a little kid, marching on the South African embassy against apartheid. And that's in the early 80s. So, you know, having older siblings was a really good thing for me.
Oh, absolutely. So we'll have to do a second interview with your wife so she can tell us how spoiled you are. Now let me ask you, did you grow up in an entrepreneurial household?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's, my father, he had a 9-to-5, right? But he was always on the cusp of the next big thing. Mm-hmm. He was writing proposals all the time. And I learned a lot from that stuff that he was doing, Sean, because my father would be sitting in a chair, watching the game, writing a proposal, right? And I didn't know what a proposal was, what that even meant. But I would watch him do this stuff, and then he would say, my mother would type up his proposal. He would present it to, the cats that he was trying to present it to. And I would listen to him later on say how the ideas that he took to his management team, he would see them on TV and stuff like that without any credit to him.
Mm.
At the time, I was a little kid. I didn't know what that meant, but it would prepare me for things that I would encounter in my own life later on. So yeah, I he would throw parties as well. We have a music here called Go-Go. You're probably familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But he threw some Go-Go's, and he's from down south. My father's from Danville, Virginia, which is next to North Carolina. He threw a go-go down there, and he had to promote it on the radio and all that stuff like that. And he let me tag along with him as he was doing those things. So it really rubbed off on me, and it is probably why I'm doing the things I'm doing today.
So in the example that you gave of your having older siblings to kind of lead the way as far as just day-to-day situations, activities, and then seeing your father as an entrepreneur and just hardworking and creative himself, would you say that representation matters?
Yeah, because I was taught to do everything. I think we see everything through the lens of culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was taught to be an entrepreneur and be cool and be academic and be loving and be God-fearing all through the African-American lens. So representation matters.
Absolutely. Okay. And then were there any hobbies or interests that led you to where you are now?
Well, I would say rap music was a hobby for me, mm-hmm. because when I was growing up in the 80s, all black kids, you know, especially urban black kids, they dug rap music. Mm-hmm. And so I was just doing what all the kids around me were doing, what my older siblings were doing, and I was watching videos all the time. UMTV Raps had just came out, and my father was like, "Oh my gosh, man, why are you always watching videos, Sean? You watch videos too much." But, you know, he didn't know that's what I would be doing later on. But you know, that's what we say about kids, right? If you look at things that they're doing when they're young, that's probably what they're going to be doing when they get older.
And you have gotten into the music industry. So tell us about, in what aspect are you in the music industry? What's your business? What's your company? What are you doing?
Well, from the entrepreneurial aspect, I'm the founder of the adult contemporary hip hop band Black History. And you know, that entails having had the vision to put the band together and, you know, become an LLC and sell merchandise and all that kind of stuff. From a creative standpoint, playing guitar and rapping simultaneously in the band.
Really? Okay, so I don't know. Let's see. I've seen people sing and play guitar. Actually, there is this one song that I do like, and the guy it's kind of rapping a little bit, and he's playing guitar. Maybe he's singing. I'm not sure, but I really do like the song. So you don't really see too many people rapping and playing the guitar. So when did you pick up the guitar?
Well, I got my first guitar when I was coming up. Prince he was everything.
He still is.
So yeah, for sure. And so I was walking around the house playing air guitar, right? Mm-hmm. And making guitar noises with my mouth. It sounded terrible. And but I kept on doing that, and I was begging my mother, "Could I get a guitar?" She was like, "Man, get out of here. You don't want no guitar." So I spent the night over my aunt's house one night, and her and my father came to pick me up, and they had a guitar and an amplifier from Sears department store. Mm. And so this is 1985. So that's when I first got a guitar, and I took one lesson, and, you know, money was kind of short. So, you know, I just took one lesson, and I pretty much put the guitar away for many, many years. And then when I picked it back up again, I really wasn't picking up guitar. I was picking up a bass guitar fiddling with that. Mind you, it was, all of it sounded terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. I got to college and I said, "Man, I'm gonna learn how to play guitar." So I had acquired a guitar by that time, not the Sears one I had when I was a little kid. And so I took a couple lessons in college and still sounded really terrible. Sounded so terrible that my neighbors in the apartment below me, they would take a broom and hit the ceiling of their apartment and be like, "Shut up."
Oh my God.
That's how bad it sounded. Fast forward, I got out of college and came home, and the guitar player at my church found out that I played a little bit. He told the minister of music there. And I still, mind you, the important thing about the story is I still sound terrible. So I got up at church and started playing and sounded terrible in front of a couple hundred people. But it made me keep on playing and keep on playing. So that's how I started kind of with guitar. But I shout out to Wyclef Jean, because in the 90s, he was killing on guitar and rapping at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking about the people now, but yeah, you're right. He did.
Yeah. He was killing.
And so one of my favorite artists right now is her.
Oh yeah.
I got an opportunity to see her in concert last, not 2020, 2019, I believe it was. And she reminded me, she was like the female version of Prince. Mm-hmm. Like, I just saw in her entire performance, I just saw Prince all in within her performance. And she plays the guitar. She plays the bass. She plays, she's very, very multi-talented. But I want to ask you, what made you, I feel like as an entrepreneur, business owner, persistence and resiliency is very, very important. And it's kind of like the fabric of an entrepreneur. But you said you were horrible as a guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, the neighbors downstairs knocking, about to bust a hole in their wall because they want you to stop. And at some point you have to say, or why didn't you say, okay, maybe this isn't for me because I truly suck. Like, what was it that kept you going even though you were horrible?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. Here's what happened. I knew I had some talent because I had developed calluses on my hand and stuff like that. But I knew I had no idea what I was playing. Mm. None. So I didn't even know what it meant to be in the key of a song. So I figured that I had some God-given talent or ability, but I was ignorant. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the ignorance, that could be, the talent and the knowledge could be bridged by, meeting folks and getting little nuggets here and nuggets there about playing. But, so that's one thing. But then I guess I was practicing what I would learn later from another musician, which he told me. He said, Sean, I was telling him about people laughing at me because I was terrible. And he said, Sean, don't ever let nobody run you off your instrument. I don't care. Don't let nobody. And he was really good. He was like, don't never let nobody run you off your instrument. And I didn't.
But you thought you were bad.
I was. I try to be real with myself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. You know what I mean? I don't want to go out in public and the people in public got to be real with me because I've been lying to myself.
You definitely don't live in Atlanta because this is the city of fake it till you make it. Absolutely. And they forget the make it part, but they got that fake it down pat.
Yeah, well, it can be quite pretentious here too. Mm-hmm. But I was very real with myself. And plus I knew. When I say I knew I had some talent, I could rap very early on. So I started rapping in like 88, 89. And by the early 90s, I had gotten pretty dangerous. So I had got some encouragement from the guys in the neighborhood to say, hey, man, you're good at rapping. And then when I would talk about my ideas that I wanted to have instrumentally, they would think that those ideas were pretty good. And so while I wasn't that good on guitar, I was still getting encouraged musically. And I just believed that if I could just marry the two, that one day I was going to be the real deal. I just didn't know when that was going to come.
Okay.
It's probably still coming. I don't know.
So have you taken any professional lessons or anything like that? What have you done? So if you realized, okay, I'm not that great. However, my ideas are great. What's the saying? Those that can, or something about teaching, those who can't teach or something. Those who can't do teach or coach or something. I don't know. Anyway, I'll have to figure that out a later day.
Those that can do and those that can't teach.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you. So for... You couldn't play the guitar to where it sounded good. So right. Did you not think, well, maybe I can teach? Mm-mm. You just said, I'm going to just keep getting these calluses and at some point I'm going to figure out. So did you get professional coaching or go get lessons or what would you, because, well, let me ask you this. Are you good now?
It depends on who you ask.
What does your wife say?
Bless my heart. It depends on who you ask. What my wife say? I don't know. I have to ask her. I don't know if I ask her if I'm good, you know.
So have you sought out guitar lessons or to be taught by someone?
Yeah. Well, when I was in college, I was telling you that I decided I wanted to play for real. I wanted to learn an instrument. And the church I was going to at the time, shout out to the Church of the Redeemed of the Lord in Baltimore, on York Road. When I was going there, in between services, their musicians would give lessons for free. Mm. So they had a dangerous guitarist there, excuse me, named Jeb. Shout out to Jeb, because I just reconnected with him after all these years over the summer. Mm. But so he was giving lessons. I might have taken 3 or 4 lessons from Jeb in a group setting. But the thing about Jeb, like all the other teachers that I had encountered over my life, when I would play, they'll be like, man, you can play. You know what I'm saying? You got all the tools. You got, you know what I'm saying? Your hands are fast. You got calluses. You know what I'm saying? You a musical dude. You know, so it was just like they just wanted to teach me the fundamentals, because I had no fundamentals at all. I didn't know what your musical listeners will understand what I mean. I had no idea what it meant to be in the key of a song. I had no idea what a chord was. Because I can't sing at all. I can't hold a tune in a bucket. So it wasn't like, you know, I knew how to, you know, what the tone was supposed to sound like. I ain't know none of that. I just know I wanted to play. And God had blessed me with the ability to have some skills. And what he also blessed me with was putting cats like Jeb in my life to say, let me show you this. You could play. Here's a chord. Learn to play that. God rest my homeboy, Theodore Man Howard's soul. He's passed away now, but we were the same age, and we met when I was about like 27 years old, and we met at a musician shed, and I had heard about him. Another guitarist I knew said, you need to meet up with this dude named Man, because he plays like Jimi Hendrix, but he looks like Snoop Dogg.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So shout out to him, because when he told me that, the guy that was telling me that, he said, I'm going to give you his phone number. And I was like, you just going to give me his phone number? He's like, yep, I'm going to give you his phone number, call him. And I was like, okay. So I just cold call a dude. He's answered his phone, and he was like, what's up? And I was like, yo, my name is Sean. I heard you play guitar. I heard you crazy on the thing. He was like, oh, man, well, thanks. I'm playing at a musician's shed tonight. Why don't you come through the shed? I said, okay. Came through the shed, played a little bit, kind of got embarrassed and laughed at, you know what I'm saying, at playing that night in front of these good musicians. But he still wanted to be he wanted to be my friend. And number two, we became guitar buddies, and he helped me grow on guitar as well. But the thing about this thing, Sean, is at every point that I met somebody, everybody said, you could play. You don't necessarily know what you should be playing right here, but you could play. So nobody, you know, even though I was bad, everybody that had music knowledge knew that I could play. And so they encouraged me.
Okay. Well, I think if I was getting that type of encouragement, so it's like they just know you need a little fine tuning.
Right.
You need, okay. So I understand. Okay. Yeah. I think I would keep going too. If I keep hearing people who have those credentials tell me to keep going, that would make me want to keep going. So yeah. how did you come up with the name Black History for your band?
Well, long story short, I was walking into a grocery store, and the person I was with, we were walking through the grocery store at the same time, and I looked at her and I said, ladies and gentlemen, the band Black History, something like that. And then Then I cupped my hands and I kind of made a noise like the crowd was behind me. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and I looked at her and she was like, ooh, that's it. And I was like, yep, that's it. So I had the name Black History before I ever had a band. And after that, you know, the saga from creating the band came. But I had the, you know, that's how the name got created.
Okay. So you have the name and then decided, okay, now I need to put some people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is that one of those, what came first, the chicken or the egg situations?
Yeah, I think the chicken came first.
Yeah, right.
In this scenario.
So we have a guitarist who's wants to play, is horrible at playing, but never gives up. Mm-hmm. And along the way continues being told that he is good, and people are just put in your path to continue to help you hone your craft. Then you come up with a name of a band, but have no members.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boys and girls listening, the message here is to keep going, okay? Okay, so you've been operating your band since about 05, 06. So you eventually got a band, got some members of your band, okay? And so your band consists of about how many people?
It depends, right? If you see the stripped down version, mm-hmm, of us, mm-hmm, you'll see about 4 or 5 cats.
Okay.
If you see everybody in full, like what you hear on the record,
sure,
that's about 13 or 14 cats.
Okay.
Because it's all real musicians, all live.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. And then now, so you mentioned earlier about starting to rap when you were in school. So tell us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I was listening to rap music all the time and I was reciting raps all the time. So the kids in my class would be like, man, you should be a rapper. You rap all the time. And I was like, no, I shouldn't be a rapper, because back during that time in the 80s, look, I'll say this till I can't say it no more. No black parent wanted their kid to rap or thought rap was cool when I was coming up. So it was very disparaged, in my household, but not among, my siblings. So in trying to be what I felt like my parents and in particular my father wanted to be, because he was an intellectual guy. So when the kids said, you should rap, I shunned what they were saying. I was like, man, rap, I shouldn't be no rapper. I was like, rappers are ignorant. That's what my father was saying. Bless his heart, bless his soul. He's passed on now. He ain't mean no harm. But he ain't know. Mm-hmm. But I was like, yeah, rappers are ignorant. So anyway, later on that year, we had a D.A.R.E. program, right, which was, keeping kids, Nancy Reagan trying to keep kids, I guess, from using drugs and that kind of thing. The D.A.R.E. program, we had a march around the neighborhood. And so I wrote a rap as part of the march. And so one of the kids was like, we should say it, while we're marching. So I said the little raggedy rhyme. It was it wasn't even finished. It wasn't good. Again, see, it wasn't good.
You are so humble. I love it. I'm a horrible guitar player. My rap was whack. But here I am today, January 7, 2021. I'm a lead guitar, or I'm a guitarist in a band that I created, and I rap.
You know it's bad. You know your rap is not good when you finish the rap and everybody just look at you like, mm. That's how they looked at me like, that's the end? That's it? Yeah, that's it. That's all I got. But from that point on, I guess that would be like 88, 89. I just kept on rapping from then. And, I never stopped.
You know what? I would love to know what you are good at, and do you keep doing that? Because it's everything that you've said you have been bad at, and you have just, you are like, oh, I'm gonna get it at some point. So do you keep that same energy? I would think the stuff you good at, you just don't do.
it sound like that, but you know, I can tell you, you know, as far as rap music goes, Sean, I just wanted to be with it so bad. I mean, I try to think about things I wanted to do in my life that I wanted to do more than rap, and I can't really think about anything because I wanted to be with it so much. I'll be filled up. It'd be like I'm about to burst with emotion when I would think about it, you know, as a kid, because it was everything that was cool about being a young black kid in the 80s, whether I'd be looking at the Fat Boys on Soul Train doing the Happy Feet, or whether I'd be listening to Cool J, or I vividly remember what it was like the first time I heard Eric B and Rakim Paid in Full. I remember where I was at. I remember where I was going, all that. And I wanted to be with it so bad. So I don't know, even since I was terrible or not good, that wasn't going to deter me because I wanted it so much.
Wow. I love that.
When the bank says no, Airbnb hosting without owning the property. Read how one woman took a bank's rejection for financing and turned it into a lucrative Airbnb business without owning the property. Sean shares her step-by-step process from picking her niche market to furniture purchases, all which led her to achieving superhost status in her first 30 days of hosting with Airbnb. Learn how she made almost $20,000 in less than 7 months while still maintaining her full-time job. New hosts are often unsure of what they need to do, making Airbnb harder than it has to be. Follow her story of determination and perseverance and learn how you can implement her practices in any of your entrepreneurial endeavors. Go to www.seanhenry.com. That's www.seanhenry to order your copy of When the Bank Says No, Airbnb Hosting Without Owning the Property.
Now, okay, so you started the band, you kept going with the guitar, playing the guitar, you kept up with the rapping because you rap and play the guitar at the same time, and you started your band Black History, that has about 4 to 13 members at any given time, all live musicians. I absolutely love that. Is the band all that you do, or do you have, are you working a regular 9-to-5, or what do you do?
Yes, ma'am. Right, you gotta put bread in the cupboard and food in the fridge. I got a 9-to-5, and music is my 5-to-9, and that's how I do it for, you know, right now.
I love that. Absolutely. So we use our 9-to-5 to fund our goals and our dreams. I love that. Now, with that being said, you know, the climate of social media is very, very funny, and it was heightened during the pandemic. Oh, you have all this time now. You should be, if you don't get out of this pandemic on another level, something's wrong with you. As an entrepreneur, or, you know, if you're working a 9-to-5, you're funding someone else's dreams, you should have your own, yada, yada, yada. I call that job shaming.
That's right.
So the fact that, one, you have a 9-to-5 that's funding your 5-to-9, like you said, it's giving you the freedom to pay your bills, you take care of your responsibilities. You said you have a wife. I know she like to eat. I know she like lights. You know, and not saying that she isn't helping, but however, you know, you have responsibility as an adult. What's your opinion about job shaming?
Well, I think that job shaming is whack. And I think it comes in two forms, though. I think there's one job shaming, right, like you mentioned, for you know, people talking about, you know, if you're working for somebody else, you know what I'm saying, then you just fueling somebody else's dreams. The thing about those people who say that is they got employees. So would they say that same thing to their employees?
Absolutely.
Probably not. But they willing to go out here and tell you that you, you know, you in order to be a boss, you need to be doing, you need to be working for yourself. So I think job shaming is whack. But I also think job shaming comes in another form, in that when we, like I said, disparage other people's dreams for what they want to become. So here, you know, in the DC area, it's a very federal town. And people come here from all over the world to work for the government. And when you don't want to work for the government, like I don't, or when you don't do anything that has anything to do with the government, so you're not a contractor or something like that, people find out that you are a creative, as me, you know, being a rapper, and that's not embraced. You're saying you often get job shamed for that. So I don't think either kind of job shaming is cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think the world, that people, so many people try to put you into this bubble. And the beauty of the human race is that we're all different. We all come from different walks of life and we all have something to offer, you know. Whether the other person feels that it's valuable or not, someone else does. Somebody else finds that it's valuable. So I appreciate your talent. I appreciate the fact that you did not quit. You kept going. And I like, what did you say? The gentleman said, don't let nobody talk you off your guitar. So I thank you for that, for sure.
For sure. And also, if I may, I don't know her personally, and I, you know, and our community has had quite a bit of angst with her in the past. However, I got to shout out Chrisette Michelle, because even though she's younger than me, I watched her in an interview many, many years ago when she had just basically arrived at fame. Her records were playing on the radio and everything like that. And they said, Chrisette, what would you tell people that are trying to, that are aspiring, you know, musicians? And she said, man, get a job. Get a real good job and make sure you keep that job. She said, because that's what I did. I wanted to get my teeth clean. I wanted to get my hair done. I wanted to go out and have things to eat. I didn't want to be a starving musician. She's like, and I wasn't, and I didn't do that. And so that taught me that I was okay. Cause at the time, that's what I was doing. I had a 9-to-5 and stuff like that. And I started to feel bad about that. And when I saw her interview, you know, it really propelled me to keep on doing what I was doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Chrisette. Like, you know, this whole cancel culture is ridiculous, you know. I feel it too, because you already hear that narrative. Oh, I'm a starving musician or actress or creative, period. I'm sleeping on somebody's couch. Hell, a lot of entrepreneurs go through that. You know, they quit their job because they're passionate about what it is that they have going on. But if you're able to balance the two and put as much passion or energy into your 5-to-9 as you do your 9-to-5, like you call it, I don't see the problem. I don't see the problem. Now, along those same lines, we have the gross narrative report. You know, the claims of I'm making X, Y, and Z. I mean, I love how transparent and honest you've been about your guitar playing, about your rapping. You know, you don't get that a lot. You know, people want to say, oh, I'm selling out venues. I'm the next Jay-Z. I'm the, you know, the Nas, Biggies, the all those KRS-Ones, all of those. But, and I'm making X, Y, and Z, yada, yada, yada. And that's not necessarily true. So what's your take on the gross narrative report?
Well, I think that you have to be Bobby Womack said, you can't jive yourself. So that's the first thing, right? Be honest with yourself. And I think when you start being honest with yourself, it become easier to be honest with other people. And then you be honest about, you know, the fact that I'm not necessarily where I would like to be as far as, you know, what the plan opportunities are, and then what we would be able to gross maybe from those plan opportunities or from the merchandise and all that kind of stuff. So you have to be real about that. Yeah, and you have to remember why you got into this. Did you get into this? I know I didn't. I didn't get into this to have a lot of money and stuff like that. I got into it because, like I told you, I wanted to be with it. And what I learned at B. Morgan State University, 1700 East Cold Spring Lane, Baltimore, Maryland, shout out.
for anybody that wants to attend.
Absolutely. In Professor David Palmer's entrepreneurship class, he had us on our first day of class. He said, tell me why one starts a business. So all of us young, black, bright, beautiful kids put our hands up and we said, you get in business to make money. And he said, y'all put your hands down. That ain't why you get in the business. You get in the business to provide a service. And then from that service, you make money. The way he made us determine the kind of business that we wanted to get into was, he said, write down on a piece of paper the three things that you would do for free. Then rank those three things in order from the things that you like to do the most to the least. He said, and that's what you should be doing your business as. And so when you look at it from that perspective of why you started doing a business anyway, it makes you more realistic and less apt to be out here lying and faking about what you gross.
Absolutely. Listen, I have a question that I usually ask everybody is what advice would you give those who are considering entrepreneurship? But I think Professor Palmer just summed that up. You know, I appreciate that. I'm definitely going to repeat that several times because that's so true. I'm working on opening a youth center as we speak, and that being a teacher, you know, or being in the classroom working with children was never a passion of mine at all. You know, I wasn't the person that said, oh, I want to have a bunch of kids, you know, that type of thing. However, my passion is the information that we didn't receive to be entrepreneurs or learning what it takes to be an entrepreneur, a business owner, or even knowing financial literacy is not out there. Or it is, but it's kind of scarce. And so my whole thing is, if I would have gotten that information in high school, maybe, you know, that would have been able to jumpstart the things that I'm doing a lot sooner. So I want to be able to give those children that information that I didn't receive, and then hopefully start a fund to help them fund their businesses. You know, so for the Sean McGee's who wants to start a band or play the guitar and don't have the means for the lessons, or, you know, or we may see the potential and he just needs, you know, the structure of it all, we can possibly provide those services for him. And Professor Palmer was so right, because I feel like this is a higher calling for me, because I've gone through hoops and red tape, and I'm still passionate about it, you know. So and it's the same with you as the playing the guitar, you as a rapper, and all the other creative things that you've done. So it's super, super inspiring. Yeah, when we open, we'll definitely have to fly you down from DC so you can talk to our youth. Now what is the rewarding part of entrepreneurship?
Well, it's very rewarding when you can, when you reach your various milestones, right? So one milestone for me was, I went from not being able to play, you know, that well, not being very ignorant about music in general, to we just finished our debut album. And, you know, for better or for worse, it's completed. And there is certainly a great amount of pride in doing that.
Absolutely.
So I was saying, you know, completing your milestones, you know, those are the greatest part of your entrepreneur's journey when you see your stuff come to fruition.
And what is challenging? What's one of the things that's challenging about being an entrepreneur?
Okay. So here's the thing I would say to anybody who's trying to get into, you know, being an entrepreneur. Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've come up with whatever your product is or your service or what have you, getting the word out to folks to let them know that you're there is the most challenging piece. And it's probably going to take the bulk of your money. And so when you saving up money to do this, right, when you save that money to create the product, try to save up double that, because that's where the remainder of your money is going to go.
And getting the word out. Right, because you can be the best guitarist, and nobody knows.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I know it costs you money.
Absolutely. I love that. What impact are you hoping to achieve, whether it's with your music, the band, you know, you as just a business owner in general?
Well, I want, you know, from a music content point, I want Black people to have the knowledge itself, right? Because the history books in K through 12 don't do a great job of showing them that and showing them their greatness and potential. So I want that. And I want people who are not from our culture, who listen and see Black history, to, when they leave, know some more about African people, because, wow, I listened to this band called Black History and they were talking about stuff that I had never seen or read about. So that's one thing, you know. And then, you know, I mean, you know, I would like to believe that the music that we make, you know, moves toward social equality, and I will hope that the music does that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. What? So a question I always end or get to the end of our interview is, are entrepreneurs born or made?
I think that leaders are made. I mean, leaders are born, excuse me. You know, at least that's how it was for me. You know, I was a leader. I always wanted to play quarterback. I wanted to, you know, tell the other folks, you know, what to do. But entrepreneurs were made. I say they were made because when I watched my father's example, when I watched my brother's example, he was having parties downtown as a young age, as a teenager. my mama made this entrepreneur monster too, because there were some guys in my neighborhood, they were raking leaves, right? Two guys my age. They were raking leaves, and I saw them out there raking leaves. And I was like, what y'all doing? He was like, what you think we doing? We raking leaves. I was like, well, you getting paid for it? He was like, yeah, we getting paid for it. I was like, huh. So I went home, and I said to my mother, you know, these two guys in the neighborhood, they raking leaves, and they getting paid. And I just left it like that, and I went on outside about my business. Well, I came home, and my mother had written on note cards, you know, that my son is interested in raking your leaves. Please call his phone number if you want him to rake your leaves. She went all up and down my block doing that. My block was long. And she would put it in everybody's mailbox. And so they made me an entrepreneur because, you know, they let me know that working for yourself in that way was cool. I couldn't finish the yards because the yard was too big. My mother, you know, had put more food on my plate than I was able to eat. But she showed me, you know, that being an entrepreneur was cool. So
let me tell you, I love the support your parents give you. I mean, you said, "Mommy, Dad, I want to play a guitar." They say, "Get out of my face." But you come home, they got a guitar for you and a lesson. You say, "Mommy, you just telling her what the kids are doing. You say you were interested. You just said there's all she heard was it's some boys my age raking leaves." She said, "Say less." And
that's right.
And she had your marketing for you, okay? She yes, kudos to your parents. I think that is super important. You know, we have to support our kids. We have to support our brothers and sisters to the left and the right of us. Whatever our dreams are, whatever our goals, we have to support one another. I think that's so beautiful. Shout out to your mom and dad. Like, absolutely. She said, oh, bet, say less. I got you.
Yeah. Shout out to George and Gloria McGee. You know what I mean? For sure.
Shout absolutely.
Out to my wife, Lauren. Shout out.
And, but you know, that is a issue though, too, with entrepreneurs. Like, you know, sometimes your business can grow faster than you're ready. And so that's what you were experiencing. You didn't have the manpower for the demand.
That's right.
With that's those right. leaves. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. But I'm glad that you really brought that to a serious point because, hey, people are doing that. They're growing exponentially and they don't have the infrastructure to keep that up. That's
absolutely.
Good. That's
yeah, absolutely. A lot of times we think it's the money, you know, but obviously that the money is a big part of it as well. But we can have a whole lot of product, no marketing budget, so nobody knows that we're here. Or we can have a little product, and somehow, you know, the business people caught wind of the business, and now we can't even supply the demand. So, I'm not a big math person, school I didn't really enjoy it too much. But I do remember in high school my economics class. That was one of my favorite classes, you know, and it has really stuck with me. I loved English. I loved writing, but economics made sense to me. Supply and demand, like that really made sense to me. My math classes did not at all, but that economics class, I said, oh, this makes sense. So I feel like a lot of that, we see that in everyday life. So it's like, okay, we need to talk more about that, those things. And so, like I said, the supply was there. I mean, the demand was there, but you didn't have the tools to meet the demand, you know, for raking leaves. So, but shout out, kudos to your mama. I'm and daddy. Like, I'm for both of them for sure.
That's right.
Absolutely.
In our last segment, Growing Our Tribe, we shout out another small Black-owned business, as well as a book that has helped us in growing our minds, which in turn grows our business.
Yeah. Shout out to my brother in music, Hector Perez, because he's very much like me, you know, entrepreneur and, you know, does his music independently, and just a real good brother, and has been with me on my journey. We bounce things off of each other. He has a couple of records that he's made. So please, you know, look up Hector Perez. My friend Don Lee Hodge, he came out with a film called American Lows. It's a documentary, and it includes cats like Roland Martin, I mean, just he's a great cat. He also is a musician too. Plays saxophone and raps and all that, and plays jazz. But his documentary is really where it's at, American Lows. Please check both of those cats out.
Absolutely. And then there was a band camp that you mentioned.
That's Hector.
Okay.
His URL is Bandcamp, but I'm sorry, I can't remember it. But when you look up Hector Perez, you know, percussion, you'll be able to find him. It won't be hard.
Okay, perfect. And then is there a book? Because we all know that readers are leaders. So is there a book that has helped you personally or helped you grow in your business?
Well, a book that helped me personally was Their Eyes Were Watching God. And when I got to Morgan, and I took my first English class at Morgan, it was the first book that we had to read. And I really dug it because it was my first experience with Zora Neale Hurston and how basically she did, from a literary standpoint, what we do as rappers all day, which is speak in an African-American vernacular. But even though it's looked down upon, you know, maybe from a poetic standpoint, she forced people to accept it from a literary standpoint by putting it in all of her books. And in that way, she gave people a glimpse into, you know, African-American culture who did not otherwise have that glimpse. And I feel like she made people proud who were already African-Americans because they could hear themselves and hear their grandmothers and grandfathers and uncles in that conversation. And I feel like that's what Black history tries to do with our music too.
Oh, that's amazing. Tell everybody where we can find you, Black history, you know, everything that you have going on.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you can go to our website, which is www.thebandblackhistory.com, and you can, you know, learn more about us. You can for sure pick up the album there. You can pick up band merchandise. You can just show your support by dropping us an email line, you know, telling us something positive, keep going. You know, those types of things. You know, when we get off pandemic punishment, you'll be able to go there and see where our next gig is. And you'll be able to use the contact information there to, you know, request us to come to your city or your town.
Oh, absolutely. And we can buy the music there as well.
That's right. That's right. You can buy the music there as well. Please come there and buy the music.
Okay, and one more time, are you guys on any social media platforms?
Yeah. On Instagram, at the band B as in boy H, at the band BH. That's how you can find us on Instagram. I'm still working the Facebook stuff out because it needs a facelift, and so I want to make it uniform with the other URLs. So stay tuned for the Facebook.
Okay, but right now we can definitely find you at thebandblackhistory.com. So all the merch, the music, everything is there. So I'm definitely looking forward to hearing the band Black History and having you guys come to Atlanta. You know, Atlanta wide open. Like, we ain't on Atlanta ain't on pandemic shutdown, so you might want to find some promoters to get you guys out here, okay? Because, you know, grown people love live bands, love live bands. It's just a completely different energy. It's completely different energy. So I love it. And then too, you know, you done set us up this entire time we've been talking that you horrible on the guitar. So, I mean, if anything, our listeners need to go to thebandblackhistory.com and hear your music just to hear how horrible you are. If that, I'm sure you got another guitarist in the band, right? You have another guitarist in the band?
No.
What? Oh. No, that's even more reason. Oh, the band blackhistory.com. You have to go there. Because we listening. Listen, I may put on my Instagram a listening party. You hear me just to hear, like, tell me, is he bad or not? Because he didn't say he's bad, but other people said he's good. We need to hear it for ourselves.
Sure. And you know what, Sean? That's what we got coming up. I mean, that's what we're trying to get coming up here, a listening. So I'd love for you to, for everyone to come, you know, as do a listening party just to see how bad or how good I really am.
Absolutely. Well, Sean, I so appreciate you. I appreciate your energy. I appreciate your resilience. You know, the support that you got from your siblings and your dad and your mom and everybody else, you know, is I feel like when we put something, when God puts something in us, he's going to bring people to us to see it into existence, and you staying with your craft and not letting someone talk you off of your guitar is definitely a blessing for everybody else and their listening ears, hopefully, when we listen to this music. How long has the debut album, what's the name of the debut album, and how long has it been out?
So the debut album is called Or Does It Explode, right? It's a line from a Langston Hughes poem. And it's been out. I did it. We put it out there last year, but it hasn't, when I say the release, I mean, with campaign steam, you know, we're still trying to do that.
Okay. So, okay. But we can get it off of the website.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. It's done, packaged for public consumption, everything.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. So again, thank you. I really do appreciate you sharing your life with us. Your energy is impeccable. I look forward to hearing your music. I look forward to seeing you guys play live and just watching you and watching this band Black History blow up.
Thank you so much for all the support. And I appreciate being on here tonight. Thank you so much, Sean.
This has been another episode of Sean Henry's Becoming with me, your host, Sean Henry. If you've gotten anything out of this conversation, please let us know in the comments or by going to SeanHenry.com and leave a review. We appreciate the time you took to listen and value your feedback. We are always looking for entrepreneurs to spotlight. If you would like us to spotlight you and your business, go to SeanHenry.com and click the link, Be My Guest. Remember to tune in every Saturday as we continue to spotlight entrepreneurs during their bumpy but fulfilling ride to success on their own terms.